Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. Bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology and processes. Our mission is simple. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies. I'm really pleased today. My guest is Reed Oakes. Reed is the global head and general manager of health industries for Hewlett-Packard. Reed leads really the worldwide healthcare industry strategy for HP. He has a long history in the healthcare field and focused on innovation and strategic solutions. So, Reed, thanks for joining me on the Tate Chronicles today.
Thanks, Jim, for having me.
Looking forward to the discussion. I'd like to start at a really high level, if you don't mind. And based on your experience and background, I think you'll be able to field this one. The state of healthcare IT. I'm always curious what folks have to say when I ask that question about the trajectory, where we came from, the paper-based systems into the early electronic systems with faxes through EMR, through HIEs, and where we may be today and where we may be headed. So if you don't mind me hitting you with that very high-level one, just where do you think we are in this trajectory, and how far along are we?
Sure. I think it's a huge question. You know, at the end of the day, there's so much that's kind of to unpack there. I think when we look at it, there's been clearly this big transition from paper over to electronic medical records, et cetera. I think if you ask any provider out there right now, they would say that those sorts of transitions have helped in terms of creating data, creating a smarter revenue cycle, a better way to kind of manage claims, manage kind of the process through that. But at the end of the day, it hasn't had a massive impact on patient care. It hasn't really improved kind of that space as dramatically as maybe it would have been expected early on. I think we've created a lot of data, and I think that there's a lot of promise in that data. But when it all comes down to it, the relationship of a patient and a provider or healthcare, you know, the patient's family and that whole entire care team with the provider or network of providers is really, you know, what we've seen a lot of impact to. And one of the things that are, as we look out into the world, is folks are really coming back around saying, hey, there's a lot of focus on interoperability and making that data, you know, driving kind of the next level of that and driving analytics into that data, all very good. But help us to really find a way to impact the provider and healthcare consumer relationship. How do we impact that, and how do we really continue to improve that? That's really where I think the next evolutions are going to be around, is as we look at now kind of coming back around full circle on the technology, what can we look for to impact and effectively get technology out of the way of the provider and healthcare patient relationship?
Reed, those comments really strike home for me. In another lifetime, I was a EHR implementation manager. And I always felt a little bit guilty going into a practice and changing the culture of how a provider would document a clinical encounter. Uh-huh. And so they, in some ways, those EHRs are very precise, but also the provider becomes almost someone who's doing data entry quite a bit. So as you say, we have all this data, but you know, the ability to have actionable data, clinical decision support, things like that. Are we in the infancy of being able to do anything with the data? Where are we with that?
I think those are processes that are clearly driven or have an opportunity to be driven by the data, right? Clearly the garbage in, garbage out kind of concept, the high quality data in, the high quality data out kind of perspective is always good, right? So the better we can get that data at entry, the better. And clearly, you know, there's spaces where we need the clinical decision support, et cetera. The challenge though is that when you ask a number of patients nowadays, ultimately how their interaction went, how did their encounter with their healthcare provider go, they tell you, well, they spent a lot of time behind the machine. They sat there, you know, doing a lot of charting and, you know, coming back to me and asking questions and coming back and selecting. The reality is that's not a good experience for anybody. The clinician who, you know, spent years and years going and learning to be able to heal folks, the patient who, you know, is kind of, you know, needing that interaction, you know, to go after a disease state or some other medical condition, you know, it's just not a good experience to have that device and those series of tools basically between them. So we look at it and kind of say, you know, what is the opportunity that we have to be able to make that technology ultimately more transparent? How do we support and deliver decision support tools? How do we still generate the right kind of data? How do we get the right kind of data back into the record, but using it and doing all of that work without harming the interaction between the healthcare professional and the healthcare consumer? That's really the target, I think, for everybody that's in the game right now.
You know, there has been such a cultural shift, really just in the last one or two decades, from going into an exam room where there's no technology to the point now where there is technology in that exam room. And to try and keep that technology, as you mentioned, Reed, from being really between the provider and the patient that they're communicating with. That's a big cultural shift for providers who've been in the field for some time. It's very difficult for them to adapt to that, I imagine.
Without a doubt, it's, you know, the technology that used to be in the room was around the diagnosis and therapeutic, you know, devices to be able to deliver it, you know, but at the end of the day, the patient was still at the center of that room. And I think what we've done with the transition into technology around EMRs, et cetera, has been put the technology, specifically the data, the record at the center of the room, right? So everything's kind of built around being able to kind of put in those responses and drive the clinical workflow in the record versus the hands on the patient that ultimately helps to drive that experience and ultimately to, you know, kind of solve some patient care issues. That's really, I think, what a lot of it's about. And when you, you know, I talk to a lot of folks who are, you know, at a technology level, at a patient level, at a health system level. And I think one of the big focuses for this decade is going to be about kind of returning that patient back to the center of the room and saying, let's make a more ambient process to ultimately drive the patient back to the center and make it really all about the patient and clinician interaction, supported by the technology to be able to bring that high quality data, that high quality decision support, still closing the gaps on rev cycle, et cetera, being able to bring all of that together and deliver that improved patient experience without harming kind of the business side of healthcare.
Reed, something you mentioned there, quality of data. And we have all these standardized data sets for medications and diagnoses and immunizations. All that's been standardized. And so it seems like we haven't quite figured out how big that hose needs to be as bringing data in at the point of care. We don't want providers to be overloaded with data. They need the right amount at the right time. And, you know, as to how to filter that data or prioritize that data seems to be something that has quite a bit of distance to go.
I think that if you look at what providers are ultimately trained in, you know, when you get down to the real root of it, a provider and patient interaction, a provider can make a lot of distance, can actually make a lot of calls with a very limited set of data, right? Fishbone diagrams were invented for a reason, and you know, kind of driving that limited set of data, you can make a lot of calls. Now, where it gets really particularly interesting is with unique or advanced disease states or things that, you know, maybe are a little bit beyond typically what a provider might have been trained in, and and giving them decision support and saying, hey, you know what, think of this or do one of these or, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that what we end up with is we're trying to throw so much data and trying to generate so much data in one single interaction that we just kind of get in the way. And so, you know, many of the providers I talk to say, you know, I'd like to be able to just make a call and be able to, you know, check my patient's fingernails and check their eyes and have an interaction with them, because you can tell so much from that discussion. And so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, as we progress through the decade and as we progress towards putting that patient at the center of the conversation and saying, hey, let's enable provider patient interaction and then find ways to be able to generate the data necessary. So let's find better ways to be able to get that data input. Can we, make better uses of speech to text? Can we use mm-hmm. other types of evidence, other types of input to be able to generate the data in a very accurate and well marked up way? So enabling, ICD-10 data sets and being able to kind of bring all that stuff forward. Being able to do all of that in the flow of the conversation as we move that relationship forward, rather than kind of taking somebody out of band, have them do a lot of charting and then come back to the conversation, try and resume. You know, that's really kind of what it's about, is being able to put the right set of data, not just all the data.
Right.
The right set of data for the specific call, the mm-hmm. right set of stuff that says, hey, we need to maybe get one of these other things. And that's a side discussion that comes in off the side, not about derailing the patient interaction.
Well, and that kind of brings us to a second major topic I wanted to hear your opinion on. And that is, as we're partially through this trajectory, and perhaps the end goal of the trajectory is the end of the rainbow, is the pot of gold, where we have an electronic health information system that's delivering the relevant data at the proper time, for mm-hmm. lack of a better definition. There's some real challenges and issues that have arisen. Of course, one of those is data silos, where we've tried to create HIEs to solve some of that. They used to be called the RIOs. I'm not sure what they'd be called 5 years from now. But how do you see where we are in terms of the data silos and how those can be bridged or broken down somewhat?
I think the data silos are, you know, kind of a fact of life. You know, you have a million different places where data ultimately is going to be generated. I think you have a lot of different places that are very specialized for their processes or procedures or very specific schemas of data that are ultimately being pulled in. I think those things are going to happen. I think the promise of health information exchange was certainly there. I think that, you know, seeing some of the progress that HIMSS and HL7 and those folks have ultimately made in terms of their progress towards a global data strategy and interoperability strategy, I think is great motion. I think at the end of the day, what we see is all of that, again, is going to kind of come together in an analytics, you know, kind of package, whether it's a federated model, whether it's a centralized model. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter when it comes down to the interactions at the point of care. And I think we're going to see data markup. I think we're going to see, you know, things like FHIR, you know, continue to add a lot of value and flexibility in the models about how data is marked up and ultimately shows up in an interoperability map. It's still really about driving that interaction at the patient level, though.
You know, one other aspect of the challenges is around this flip side of the coin for the promise of actionable data, that we have data that actually can be based on rules that suggest actions. Of course, in the most basic sense, it'd be if somebody has a diagnosis of diabetes and they have some lab work done and their hemoglobin A1C is out of whack. It'd be good if a rule pops up that says might need to be some adjustment in the treatment plan. But we don't want too many alerts, because then you ignore them. And so where do you see that going, and how far along the trajectory are we in clinical decision support, and as some folks call it, artificial intelligence almost?
Yeah, I think that alarm fatigue is without a doubt a tremendous challenge, and I hear that from clinicians and health professionals every day, right? Is that we just have too many things to pay attention to. We end up, just alarms are mentally silenced. We start kind of just clicking through pretty fast in terms of what folks have told us about. What I think it ultimately comes down to is how do we start to put the right kind of intelligence behind it, whether it's a specific data set based on a pick list or things like that. That's clearly one option. I think we'll see AI continue to pick up, and as we see more accurate work around that, around things like, decreases in false positives or negatives, and certainly a more accurate outcome out of AI, I think we'll continue to see some of that happen. I think the important piece is still about how do you inform the provider at the point of care and enable them to get the right data, the right alert, just in time. And I think AI has great promise. I think some of the, machine learning, deep learning, AI kind of processes, clearly there's a lot of potential there. I think it's still about being able to figure out how do you put that communication in the hands of the provider without really jumping in between the patient or the healthcare consumer and their family and the provider. So AI is going to play a significant role. It's just about still where, how that shows up and being able to decrease that number down to an actual reasonable number that a provider can really engage with.
Absolutely. Well, we've kind of talked about where we've been and where we are and where we hope to head and what some of the issues and challenges are that surround us right now. Can you give me some examples of HP's innovation and where we are and the path forward in healthcare?
Mm-hmm. Sure, Jim. So the from a HP perspective, we really have three primary areas of focus that we work with our provider customers about, and probably the main one that really hits on the subject matter you're kind of working on and your listeners are interested in is around really our enterprise healthcare solutions. So what do we do in the healthcare provider space to be able to deliver better technology at the point of care, ultimately trying to make it as transparent as possible? So how do we speed things like access to data? How do we speed authentication and decreasing the amount of time it takes a provider to get to the data that's pertinent for that specific encounter? Those are the kinds of things that we focus on in the enterprise, solving things that are, seem so mundane at the end of the day. How do we print within an electronic medical record environment? How do we securely print and ensure that basically that the documents with specific PHI are not, printing to a printer on the other side of the network? Being able to kind of remove some of those roadblocks or hurdles that typical providers and the healthcare professionals are really running into. How do we get rid of those things so that ultimately, if that gives a few more seconds or a couple minutes even of that interaction back to the provider so that they can have a better interaction with that patient at the point of care during that encounter, if we can do that, and that's really our goal, is to be able to do that, that's really what it's all about. From there, we focus on a lot of things around delivering virtual reality and some of the cool tools around surgical planning and virtual reality therapeutics and those sorts of things, as well as just educating the next generation of clinicians. Clearly a lot we do in that space, and we're seeing a massive amount of uptake in those areas as we see clinical efficiency driving, as we see the next generation of clinicians learning faster and really picking up these technology pieces faster. And then the third area is really around how do we engage and educate patients wherever they are in their healthcare journey, anywhere from wellness all the way through the cycle out into palliative care. What sorts of things do we need? Where do we need to meet the patient with technology that ultimately helps them to participate in their journey, get educated on kind of their current states of health, and be able to figure out where do I go and get more information? Who do I need to engage with? What other social impacts can I have? How do I get that? And that's across the entire socioeconomic and kind of various markets, whether it's mature markets or emerging markets, across that entire scale, where do I go out and I find that information and be able to kind of do that work? And that's, those are really the three primary areas that we focus heavily on.
Well, you know, one thing you just mentioned about where patients can go for information, that kind of touches on a favorite topic of mine of patient engagement. When EHRs were first starting to become maybe in the second generation a few years back, we started seeing the opportunity for patient portals. And to me, those have started to get pretty good as far as communicating with your provider. I think it probably saves providers a lot of time. You don't have to call and wait on the phone, things like that. I'm not sure when the exchange of clinical information, of course, provider can send you lab results, things like that, but where there'll be maybe patient-reported data going back through a portal and populating a healthcare record that way. I'm not sure, but we're starting to see that mature, the whole area of patient engagement.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you know what we've seen, I would call it the advent of healthcare consumerism, right? We're all so used to being able to check the status of my order on Amazon. Why can't I check the status of my labs and get the feedback on my labs right away, right? Those sorts of things are you know kind of just understood nowadays that I should be able to have access to that. What I think the next step in your question is about is, you know, how do we create that bi-directional channel for information? We got a great way to be able to kind of go look at my status and maybe set some appointments and maybe send a few messages. But, you know, the ongoing management, treatment, therapy about patients and their continued and ongoing interaction with the health system, you know, depends really on that collaborative work between the patient and their you know healthcare network. And what I think, you know, we're seeing is, you know, organizations in the health systems that are kind of pushing back a little bit and saying, hey, wait a minute, you mentioned, you know, patient submitted data. Well, you know, we always have challenges with accuracy, whether it's interpretation or, you know, what have you. So, you know, I don't want to have that added to a clinical record that all of a sudden I have to sort through. And so how do I make sure that I get high quality, accurate data coming in a cadence that actually makes sense to me, right? And by the way, you know, a single point in time glucometer or A1C rating probably isn't the story, right? The thing that I love to talk about is the trend line, the actual trend line of my blood sugar ratings over the course of time is actually the data point that I really want to see. It's that, sure. It's the whole line, not one single reading that's just a point in time. And so I think part of the deal is you have to have accuracy to be able to do that. You also have to deliver it back to the clinician in such a way that allows them to be able to interpret it and not have to, you know, evaluate every single log entry in, you know, its base state. So there's a lot of different ways that I think, you know, we're seeing organizations and partners out there in the world that are starting to, you know, kind of do some of that interpretation in line, grab the data, you know, and be able to give the right recommendations. Again, whether that's centralized on AI, whether that's, you know, utilizing some of those other tools, to be able to do what you were talking about earlier, reduce alarm fatigue, and make sure to really pick out the nuggets of really actionable, important information for the providers to be able to do. And we see that as being kind of part and parcel to the entirety of you know, being able to bring those packages, that entire set of technology together for providers and patients to be able to continue to drive and improve their interaction day to day.
Reed, it's kind of hard to believe, but we only have about 3 or 4 more minutes to talk here. And something else I want to touch base on is coming up is the HIMSS conference. 45,000 people will be in Orlando. And I know HP is going to have a major booth there. I think it's booth 1541. I want to come by and see it. What are some of the things that attendees will be able to see at the HP booth at HIMSS?
Yeah, you know, HIMSS Global Conference is without a doubt a centerpiece, I think, in the grand scheme of where you see a lot of new technologies coming and going. You know, our focus this year is really about continuing to drill down on the type of workflow solutions that we've been kind of discussing here a little bit. You know, what kinds of things are we ultimately doing to be able to empower that process, both from a clinical healthcare professional space, as well as looking out and you know, what are the impacts that VR and broader population health can ultimately have to drive, educate, and help to get patients engaged in the process. So, you know, our space is really about creating that improved clinician experience, engaging patients wherever they are and helping them to drive and be educated as they play a significant role in their healthcare journeys moving forward.
I really look forward to that. I'll be there and I'll be coming by booth 1541. Hopefully you'll be there when I come by, but I'll spend some time there, Reed.
Yeah, appreciate it. Look forward to it.
Yeah, before we sign off, for our audience, if they want some more information, what's the best way to find out more about HP's healthcare solutions? How do they contact?
Yeah, best way is, you know, our website details pretty much most of it. So hp.com/go/healthcare is always a great basis.
Okay.
You know, to start.
Okay, great. And I believe 800 number is 800-820-5591. Totally out of time. I want to thank our audience for joining us today on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. I offer, of course, a special salute and very thankful to my guest, Reed Oakes of HP. Reed, thanks for coming aboard today.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.